Perché non so dimenticar e seguito ad amar la prima che ho baciato. In me non vive che il passato. Perché...
Hi everybody, this is Mark Ciappardini. Thank you so much for coming back to the Go See Talk podcast experience. Why don't you break out a cannoli and some limoncello? We're going to have a wonderful chat with a good friend of the site, Alex Heffes. He's the composer of multiple movies that span the globe, from DC to Uganda to now Italy. Alex is the composer of Catherine Hardwicke's latest film, Mafia Mama. It's fun, it's feverish, it's flavorful, and this musical dawn has he's making you a score that you can't refuse. So Alex, thank you for coming back on the show. How's things been in your world?
Thank you, a great introduction. Things are good and things have been very fun because we've been all keyed up for Mafia Mama this weekend. We just did the premiere and Toni Collette was there with Catherine and Monica, so it's been really fun. Yeah,
that's excellent. You know, I've worked with your rep Jason PR for a number of years, and there's always a rush to speak to a composer, see the movie, and you know, the buzz before the film comes out. And it's rare that I get to speak to a composer after, you know, all the dust settled and the red carpet's done. So how are you feeling? How was the weekend? How do you let your hair down after a premiere?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, all your work is done at that point. You know, there's nothing else I can do. But the film goes into an interesting new phase where you start watching it, you know, with a real world audience. And it's sort of fun. I went to the AMC at the weekend. Catherine was giving a talk and at a public screening. And it's just great to see people, you know, lining up and coming into a theater and laughing and like gasping and and all the things that audiences do. And that's... you know, it's a really nice feeling when you've been working on something for a long time to just sit in a room with, you know, with people and just see them enjoying it. So it's a whole new phase and really fun.
Well, you know, I saw Renfield last night, the Nicholas Holt and Nick Cage vampire movie, and I had a blast. And there was only about three or four of us in the theater. But whether it's three or 300, it is really great to get back in the theater, experience it, and just enjoy what happens in the dark of the cinema. Well, you know, if we can go back a little bit, what were some of the things that got you into music? Was it Nino Rota? Was it jazzy Italian quartets? What got you going from a young age?
Yeah, well, you know, I guess, you know, it was the age of E.T. and Star Wars and Indiana Jones, you know, all the, you know, the amazing stuff that we, you know, that we grew up on. I guess also I was a big Henry Mancini fan when I was very young. You know, those, you know, the Pink Panther movies. And I just loved the comic music that he wrote. I'm not sure that the music that I wrote for Mafia Mama is like directly inspired by that, but it's certainly, when I think back to like comedy scores that I really loved as a child, you know, something that's just really playful and tuneful. I realized, thinking about it, you know, I really loved those. You know, I was very influenced by anything that was had a great tune. So, you know, E.T. and Star Wars and all those John Williams scores are just hugely, they made a huge impression. I actually remember seeing Star Wars for the very first time in the cinema in 1970. I think it was probably 1978 when it came to the UK. And I remember just running home, as I was only very small, running home because the movie theater was at the end of our street, which was amazing because my mom used to leave us in the movie theater, you know, in the summer holidays. You know, it was like the kids, they'd just give you a couple of bucks, go there, spend the whole afternoon, and I could just walk down the street. It was literally just there. I remember running home and trying to pick out the notes of the tune, you know, on the piano as a little child. And actually, the way John Williams writes, it sounds so easy and so accessible, but when you start trying to pick it out on the piano, it's sort of tough, actually. And that got me hooked. You know, I was sitting there thinking, oh, that doesn't quite sound right. How do I figure this out? And I think that started a lifelong bug of trying to sort of figure out how to make things sound right to me.
Well, speaking of simplicity or perceived simplicity, Catherine Hardwicke directed Twilight, and she used Claire de Lune, Debussy's Claire de Lune, in the movie pretty to very good effect. Yeah. And I always thought to myself, you know, once I start to play the piano, when that happens, the first thing I want to try to play is Claire de Lune. It sounds so simple. And somebody was like, it is not simple. So can you break that down?
Well, actually, I think the way that you just mentioned it, perceived simplicity, is actually a brilliant way of putting it, because I think many things that appear just right to us when we're listening or watching them, it's an appearance of simplicity, but it's because all the blocks of the constituent parts are in the right place. So, you know, I think it's a bit of a truism, but when something just seems right, or it seems enjoyable to people, it goes by without you even noticing it, certainly with music and film a lot, and that's sort of how it should be. But sometimes getting to that point, you know, can be a real struggle. But something like Claire de Lune, I think, is about keeping a long line of the piano, because a piano is an instrument that doesn't have any sustain to it. It's not like a trumpet, you know, that we used in Muffin Man, that you can blow down, and as long as you're blowing, you know, the notes there. When you press a note on the piano, you press it and then it starts dying away. So trying to make a sustained line is really strangely difficult on a piano. And that's the challenge of the simple, like, sort of line that you get in Claire de Lune, is to try and make it seem like you're playing on a string section or something that's got that beautiful sustain. But I love how you put that there. You know, the perceived simplicity of things in music and film is what I'm always after. And when you lift up the hood, sometimes things, you know, it's like when you get in your car, you know, it seems simple. You get in there, you turn the key and off it goes. But you sort of don't need to know what's going on under the hood most of the time. But there's a whole load of stuff going on to make it all look like it's just working smoothly. It's a similar sort of thing.
Well, being on the creative side of scoring, and I just love, you know, being a consumer and taking things home and spinning it on vinyl or in my car or something. But being on the creative side and being on the other end, under the hood, so to speak, are the things that you think to yourself, man, I heard that for years as a kid, and like, I can't believe that this is how it was created, or like you said, maybe it was just this instrument, it was so simple. Is there any under the hood experiences that have made you think, like, just contrary to what your mind thought when you were, before you could play music?
Yes, it's true, actually. Actually, the one that jumped straight into my mind when I first came to work out here in LA, and my first session in Hollywood, quite a few years ago now, we had a wonderful percussionist. It was actually Don Williams, John Williams's younger brother. And I was very excited to meet him because I knew that he'd played on Jaws, you know, on the original score. I said to him, you know, there's this amazing sound right at the beginning of Jaws. And it's this weird, spooky, echoey thing. What is it? And I remember Don saying to me, you know, I don't have the faintest clue. I don't remember. I mean, it was like 30 years before or something. He's a wonderful guy. He was an amazing guy. But it got me thinking, and I started doing some research, and I went back and listened to the score again. And now with fresh ears, as you say, as someone who's sort of been doing it for many years, I was listening to it, and I always thought it was a synth sound you hear. It's almost like a sound effect at the beginning of Jaws. It almost doesn't sound like music, but actually I figured out what it is. It's a huge gong, and that I think Don had been scraping it with like a rubber ball or something, so that you scrape this thing over the metal, and it, instead of sounding scrapey, it actually makes a tone a bit like a whale, sort of like a weird whale noise, whale sound. And when I started experimenting, trying to recreate that sound, like it was like a light bulb going. I was like, oh wow, that's how they got that sound all those years ago. But it was sort of funny when I asked the guy who made it, how did you do it? It's like, well, you know, I can't quite remember now.
That's really amazing. You know, over the years, I've done just a tiny bit of work with the Dallas Symphony here, and I've gotten to know Richard Kaufman, who is a traveling conductor, but he actually was a session musician. He played violin on Jaws and Close Encounters and a couple other John Williams scores. And so there's that great wealth of knowledge that, you know, I almost wish I knew what these guys forgot, you know, these classical musicians, and, you know, just the amount of education they have attained over the years. It's just, you could fill libraries.
Well, yeah, and the sessions come thick and fast. You know, you're doing stuff every day, and you know, I can imagine sometimes, you know, you're like, I don't remember that. I'm almost getting to that point, you know, myself, where it's quite an interesting experience going back and hearing, you know, music that I wrote years ago. Sometimes you remember every single note and how it was to write every single note, and occasionally I hear something and I go, oh, gosh, I don't remember that. That was sort of interesting.
Well, the last time we spoke was for Mandela, Long Walk to Freedom. And I have to say that the title track on that, just very few albums, being a big film score fan, there are very few albums I can recall that just hit me and grab your attention like that very first track, Sons of Zosia, or Wosa, I learned. So there's a conciseness to, I'm drawing a parallel to, that to what's happening in Mafia Mama. There's like a couple 1 minute tracks that just grab your attention. Like He's Gorgeous is just a lot of fun, and the Romanos is very very short but concise track. What is your approach to hitting something that is so, I guess, meaningful in a small period of time?
That's an interesting question. Well, I can tell you on Mafia Mama actually what happened, which was that before the film was shot, Catherine asked me to write a couple of themes for the two rival families in the movie, you know, the Romanos that you just mentioned and the Balbanos. So I wrote something. It was sort of a mock-up, you know, we didn't record it with all the live instruments at that point. It was just sort of like a demo, but so that by the time they'd shot the movie and started, the editor started constructing it, he actually took some of the themes that I wrote and placed them on the right scene, so that by the time I was watching the film for the first time, it already had some of my music on it placed in the right place. And so it gave a really precise, there was like a mapping out of which themes came where in the movie. And it was actually very helpful for me when I actually then went back and started writing the movie, because there was already a sort of a roadmap, and it was very precisely laid out. So we want the Romanos here, we want the Balbanos here, and then we could do a variation on the Balbano theme here. And that was a really, it's a fun way of working. It's quite tough writing music to a script before you've actually seen the movie. But in this case, Catherine was really clear. She's such fun, and she's got such high energy. She sort of acted out how she felt like the Romanos would be, and the Balbanos would be. She gave me like a action sort of like a replay before the event of what they might be. So we sort of managed to pin the character down early on. So you know, it doesn't always work that sort of approach, but it was really helpful and fun in this, you know, on this movie too. To do it that way around.
Well, then you must be existing in that rarefied composer atmosphere where you have the luxury of not reading a script. Because I know Max Steiner was famous for not reading scripts. John Williams has that luxury. So I guess, you know, how do you like to work?
You know, it's down to every different director and every scenario, but it's, you know, there have definitely been plenty of occasions where the director sent me a script like Catherine did, and I've written music, and sometimes. And I've done that thing where you write a suite. I did that for State of Play, which is a film I did quite a long time ago with Russell Crowe, Ben Affleck. It's a Kevin MacDonald film. I wrote a lot of music just to the script. And sometimes you don't quite know what the film is going to look like, you know, when before it's shot. So sometimes the visual style of a film really tells you a lot as a composer. But sometimes the script, you know, it can give you a really interesting foothold, definitely into character and character motivation, even if you don't know visually how the film might sort of present. So being able to write themes for characters is really useful. And I find once you've got a theme, it gives you something to sort of hang your hat on, if you like, and you can start developing that and morphing it and molding it. And that's where then writing a suite can be really interesting, because you can start exploring, push-pulling, a bit like taking a piece of clay and seeing how far, you know, you can pull it in one direction or push it in another direction, musically speaking. And so that by the time you come to actually see the movie, it sometimes some of the music is done in a sense, or sometimes you almost start again from scratch, but there's been a lot of thinking time and a lot of exploration. So even though sometimes you feel like you've had to throw out a lot of what you've been working on, nothing is ever wasted, because you'll find that you'll sort of spark ideas a lot quicker, and you'll start working on new things a lot quicker because you've already gone through that process. So it can be a tough thing to do, but actually quite rewarding and interesting if you have the time. Sometimes you just don't have the time. Sometimes you come on very late on a movie and there's just a few weeks or whatever to just get it done. So,
well, getting involved with Catherine so early in the game, how much time did you have? And I mean, you've worked with her before on Miss Bala and Into the Woods. So did that give you a little extra running room, leading up to your themes?
Yeah, it did, because I wrote those early. And then what tends to happen nowadays, in the old days, you used to have like a schedule on a movie. You used to come on and score the movie, then it was done. And nowadays, I think it's something to do with technology, but everything is a little bit more of a moving, there's lots of moving parts. So I'll come on, and for a few weeks I would write. So for Catherine, I'd write these themes, and then I would go on to something else whilst they went off and shot the movie, and then I'd come back to it. So even though it's quite a long period of time, you wouldn't necessarily be working every day on that one thing, because you need to wait for some picture to come back to you so you can carry on working. So it can be very confusing switching between projects when you're writing music like that, but it's also, I find it, it's a bit like, everyone has this issue where you're trying to figure out a puzzle and you go to sleep and the next morning you wake up and all of a sudden, you've got the answer, because there's been a little bit of, or you've gone off and done something else. You go off and make dinner or have a walk or something. It's sort of the same when you're writing music. Sometimes working on some themes for a bit and then leaving them, going off and working on, another project for a while, and then coming back to it, you can see with a bit more clarity what the issue was you were trying to sort of figure out. So it's not a bad thing. It's more of a time management issue.
Well, I do like the way you phrased it, like stretching some clay, because I might actually end up stealing that, but it's kind of nice that you see how far it goes before it breaks. But then, do you find that there's maybe success in taking your theme and just playing it, maybe not even a different pitch, but playing with just a different instrument? It has a whole new flavor or attitude?
Absolutely. In fact, the theme I wrote for the Balbanos, first of all, I put it on the guitar. I felt like Kristen, Toni Collette's character, she brings she's more like the godmother, obviously, than the godfather, because she brings her own personality to it. And I thought it would be nice to have something a bit more gentle. And Catherine was like, yeah, I like the tune, but I do think it needs, she wanted to tip a hat to the godfather, because it's a running gag in the film, which is great. And so I tried putting it on various different instruments, and we did put it on the trumpet for the beginning. And then at the end of the film, when Toni has sort of found her own feet and she is her own character, then it actually does come on the guitar, and it's got that slightly more gentle sort of edge to it. So definitely having experimenting with those different timbres works. And once we decided that her theme would definitely work on the trumpet, then for the Romanos, I wanted to have something that was similar but contrasting. So I thought, well, instead of a high brass, let's use the low one. So I used the tuba solo for the Romanos theme. So it's almost like Toni's got her high up thing, and then the Romanos have got their low down thing, but they're still both brass instruments. So they're sort of like two peas in a pot, because this is warring families and warring relations. They're always at war, because essentially they're the same, they're two halves of the same thing. So that was my thinking with keeping it within the brass family.
Well, I'm glad you did, because there's actually some things that I can't discern. I would say that I have probably six or seven favorite tracks, everything from Bruno Meets His Match to Funeral Shootout. But I think the one that I would say is my favorite is We Are the Mafia. But it almost has this kind of a Spanish guitar to it, which is odd because it takes place in Italy. So can you break down, even has a little bit of organ in there, can you maybe break down that palette?
Yeah, well, I suppose by nature, you know, a nylon guitar is, we call it Spanish guitar, because it's got that, you know, it's so inherent to the sound of Spain. But, you know, guitars are used everywhere. And so it's tricky. I wanted to use the guitar because it's such a, it's a great rhythm instrument. I guess sometimes it does sound a bit Spanish, but Spain and Italy, you know, they're not that far apart. But I was trying to, what I wanted to do was to try and use electric guitar, actually, to try and sort of key into that more Italian sound of, you know, that you get like in Sergio Leone and those sorts of things. But I found that it just did sound a little bit too, it's just too redolent of those Western movies when I was using the electric. So I felt like the acoustic guitar just sat much better. All of the acoustic, I was trying to keep it all very acoustic. So the band we put together, it had the accordion and the mandolins and dulcimers and like lots of fun percussion. I sort of based it a little bit on that little band that you see in the funeral scene. You mentioned the funeral shootout. Now, if you remember at the beginning of the funeral, there's like a little marching band in the Italian village, and there's a tuba and a marching drum and a trumpet, and they sound a little bit off and a bit, but it's sort of fun, you know. It's got that sort of very sort of rustic sound to it. So the little band that I put together for some of the sequences have got some of those instruments in it, and there was no guitar in the band, but guitar does give some harmony, and I needed something to give a little bit of you know, harmony through line. So that's how the acoustic guitar ended up there. And you know, if it sounds a bit Spanish in places, it's like, well, you know, that makes it all the more cosmopolitan, what can I say?
Or like they say in Casablanca, well, that makes Rick a citizen of the world.
That's right. I mean, it's funny, actually, you should say that, because I mean, a lot of my career has been people asking me to like combine music from different countries. Like you were talking about Mandela, you know, taking music from Africa, or Last King of Scotland as well. You got Central Africa, you know, and trying to take music from one part of the world and sort of fuse that with the language of film music, which is obviously very melodic and orchestral. And I've always felt like in film music, sometimes those two things are just sort of jammed together a little bit. So I've always tried to find an interesting way of fitting in those different elements. So when it came to Mafia Mama, just trying to see how that little band and those little character quirky instruments, they could all fit together with the orchestral part of the score, and try to find a good balance so that it seems natural, you know, so it doesn't seem like everything is just sort of jammed together. And that's, looking back on it, that's been a bit of a through line of something that people like to ask me to do. And I guess that's because I, you know, maybe I'm good at doing that, or I'm not sure, but it's interesting that I've collaborated a lot with people. I like working with musicians. And so we had real fun on Mafia Mama recording that little band. You know, we spent a week doing each person individually. So we would do like accordion one day, then trumpet, and then we'd spend a couple of days with percussion. And we had a wonderful guy bring in like every percussion toy under the sun and dump them on the floor in the studio. We literally went through and found what would sound really Italian, all sorts of wonderful tambourines and hand drums. And I love doing that, because it's something I've always done, just experimented with players and with people to find some interesting, you know, colors.
Well, I would say that there's probably one of the most colorful elements of Mafia Mama is Tony Collette. I think if there's an heir to Peter Sellers' throne, even though they're not related, this has got to be like the Pink Panther. When it comes to her, I guess, how much do you lean into her performance, or how much do you take inspiration from what Catherine is saying? Like, what informs you the most now that all the like pieces are put together?
Yeah, well, I think you're right. The performance is key. That's everything, especially in a comedy where it's all, you know, it's so central. You know, either people find it funny or they don't, you know. So I thought it was really important to, well, I watched the film a lot, and I could see immediately that Tony is really, really funny. And I think the reason that she's particularly funny is because she's very likable, and she plays it sort of quite straight in a way. So keeping her really grounded and likable, I think, was really important. and sort of playing straight against the comedy. Sometimes writing funny music is really hard because the audience can sense funny music a mile away. You know, people don't want to be told it's funny. They want to feel it's funny. So I think letting the performances really lead and letting Tony really lead and not trying to clear space around her performance and her punchlines, you know, the way she delivers punchlines in this really sort of deadpan, just really likable, sort of like everyday person way, was really key. So I try and sort of steer clear of flattening out her performance. So watching really carefully, and it's a little bit in a weird way like ballet. You sort of have to dance around the music's there a lot, but it has to sort of dance around the performances and the action as well, the action sequences. You sort of have to be really nimble and be able to like be there and then jump off for a moment and then or go to a different register or a different thing and then come back again, but make it feel like that dance is all just like natural, that's happening in a fluid way. So that's a little bit going back to the under the hood conversation we were having earlier. You know, you sort of don't want to feel that's happening. You just need to know it's all flowing in that fluid dance-like way where, you know, there are no hard landings. The music always lands with, you know, it's on tiptoes and it's nimble. Nimble's a nice way that I like to think of like action comedy music, and it's this type of music I like a lot, is that's really nimble and just like dancing around.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the serious tone, because at least Tony's delivery of serious tones. I mean, I think my favorite part of the movie is when she drinks the wine. She goes, "It's bad," and he goes, "Well, yeah." And she learns that the mafia don was killed, and she's like, "Is that why they killed him? Because he's bad, you know, bad at making wine." It's just the sort of, you know, fish out of water, you know, nature of the story made this so charming.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, charming is a great word, because she is totally charming. And actually, in real life, she seems totally charming. When I met her the other day, she was lovely as well. But I think that's a big key to why people like her on screen. I think, you know, her relatability and just like someone that you feel is charming and nice. And that's why Mafia Mama, I think, works so well, because, you know, there are some heinous things that go on in this film. It has to be said, you know, it's a horror, you know, the mafia is a horrible crime thing. And so she manages to bring likability to the entire proceedings. And so, and it means that Catherine could really push the film to the limits. So Tony keeps murdering people by accident, as you know, in increasingly heinous ways, but because she really didn't mean to do it and she's just a very sweet person, you sort of forgive her. And that's, you know, that's the comic charm of the film.
I had such a good time watching this movie. I actually watched it twice just because I just love the charm of it. Your score is phenomenal. And just it almost feels like it's like a time capsule almost. It's like taken out of time. I feel it has a 90s sensibility, a bit of a spy mystery to it, the bounciness. But, you know, I was Mel Brooks famously said that he talks about his films being serious. He goes, "They're not dramatic. They're serious, and there's a difference." And what I like about this has so much fun at its own expense. It invites the audience in, and I think all the jokes land. But what were some of your favorite parts, and like what makes you laugh? What are some of your favorite comedies?
Some of my favorite comedies, well, going back, we've mentioned the Pink Panther already, and you know, it's just the silliness of those as I was growing up. And the thing that always struck me was, as a child, I was watching them and finding them really silly and hilarious. But I found it really interesting that the adults around me also were laughing like children and found it similarly silly and funny. And you know, as a child, that really stuck with me, because it's, you know, sometimes, you know, you think adults are all grown up and don't find childish things silly. But of course, we all find the same thing silly. You know, it's anything that appeals to us is essentially on a childlike level. You know, if it's funny for a child, it's probably funny for an adult. And that made a big impression on me. So I was always a big fan of very silly films. I mean, I actually really still love the Marx Brothers, which is maybe very niche, but you know, Duck Soup is wild and totally chaotic and anarchic in a way that you almost couldn't make in a movie now, and that was made in 1930, whatever. And that's off the scale. It's like, it makes Monty Python look almost tame in comparison. So I guess I secretly am quite a fan of very silly things, even though I've done a lot of very serious movies in my time, and people ask me quite, you know, to do very, you know, considered, intense, you know, dramas and biopics. But this has been such a pleasure to be able to just, you know, just be a bit silly and just make something that, I'm glad to say that you watched it twice, you know, make something that people could just really just sit back and just have a really entertaining time, you know, because at the end of the day, that's what we're trying to do with movies and with music is, you know, entertain you.
Well, I think that's a good way to end it, Mr. Heffes. Thank you so much for your time, Alex. Please give my best to Catherine and everyone, all the players who made this wonderful, charming. I'm going to use the same word for Tony that I will use for your score. This was a charming effort. Everyone check out Mafia Mama, and we will catch you next time.